This episode is brought to you by the free graphic of the week from Church Media HQ, where we send you a new social, sermon, or seasonal graphic, including editable source files, every week for a full year. If you haven't signed up for the free graphic of the week yet, what are you waiting for? It really is completely free, and I've heard a bunch of churches tell me that this is a very helpful resource. So make sure that you sign up for the free graphic of the week at churchmediahq.com. That's churchmediahq.com. Recently, I finished up a conversation with Jeremy Lenentine in our recent episodes where we were talking about this idea of doing community outreach at your church in a way that might be more unique, that actually goes into the community and helps and reaches people in unique ways. And Jeremy wanted to continue that conversation, and so he was able to connect with some of his pastor friends and talk to them a little bit more about this idea. And the reason I love this episode is because this is generally just pastors and guys that are actually doing this week to week. I'm not included in this conversation. It's just these guys talking about it, and it's really awesome to hear their perspective and just really hear from guys, again, that are doing it week to week. And so I'm really excited to share this with you. And so I'm going to turn it over to Jeremy here in just a bit. My name is Luke Clayton, and welcome to Church Media HQ.
Caleb, do you got anything there or any events that you guys have started to do at your church?
Yeah, I think for every community, it's going to be a little bit different, right? It's going to color a little bit different depending on what the culture and all that is. And I appreciate you saying that about small ministries, and I appreciate the clarification with Pastor, because it's a great move as far as, you know, you're getting people's homes and you're just loving them, right? It's so good. And so what we decided basically when we started the church was we weren't going to look at it, lack of facilities or being new, as like an obstacle. And so we just kind of got on board with what was already happening in the community and kind of inserted ourselves, not necessarily like in the parade type thing, but we just really wanted to build relationships and kind of just show people that we were, you know, we love them, we're for them. And so more or less, some of the things we did kind of would look like is we did this. They have a large Shamrock Run. So before we ever started the church, all the healthy people come out. And so really all they wanted us to do was just pass out water to people and just kind of be there for them, you know? And so we just set up and we're passing out water and just really weren't asking anything else from them. We're just kind of involved in what was already kind of happening. So instead of like creating the event, you know, we're just participating in the event. We're serving. We're the primary person doing it. Just little stuff that we get to do, which I think is pretty cool. And so we have, there's a local baker that we partner with every other week or so, maybe once a month, pretty consistently. And so, you know, we get to go to a lot of businesses, a lot of different, you know, people that are hurting. And then we, you know, anybody that's kind of like in need, typically they're a go-to, they're our first stop. And then we, you know, go to these people. And so, you know, it has a small cost to it, but there's something about, you know, having one of our church people write a letter that says have a sweet day, or it's kind of cheesy, but that's kind of, you know, it is what it is. And I think it just builds relationships both ways. And so from a new church or smart church perspective, it was really good. And then I appreciate the broadening perspective a little bit. I think we could facilitate some of the things he was talking about too.
Yeah. So for our church, one of the things that we did to try to also build an ongoing partnership, but meet needs, we went, the school that's the closest to us, elementary school, is just 2 minutes away. And they actually have the most kids in need of any school in the district. So that fall below a poverty line, whatever that is for our city. So they said, okay, that's the school. We said, well, that's great. It's right beside us. So we went to them, and then I don't know if a lot of churches probably do this already. We just went to them and said, hey, we would like to adopt your school. Is that okay if we have that partnership with you? And they were like, well, what does that mean? And we were like, well, you know, we're making up as we go. We said, well, you know, what needs do you have? And then can we also take care of your staff in a certain way? So the kids and then also the staff. And so one of the things that we now get to do with them is about twice a year is we provide breakfast for all of their staff. They have about, with support staff and everybody, they probably have 80 or 90. And so the first week of school, we get to deliver it there and meet a lot of those teachers and stuff before they start the school year. And then somewhere throughout the year, they'll call us and say, hey, we're doing this thing, try to encourage our teachers, could you do breakfast for us? And that costs us a couple of $100 when it comes up, so maybe not everyone can do that. But since they are adopted school, it works really well. Then we do two or three events to help their kids throughout the year. One of them is coming into July and August, we start collecting backpacks for a backpack drive for them. And there's probably about 60 students they've identified that need some type of help. And so we'll have our people go out and bring in the backpacks and then just take that list and just start stuffing it with supplies. And I wouldn't say that we, not every backpack has 100% of supplies, but it has 70 or 80% of supplies that the school requires for the kid to start the school year. And then we drop them off at the school, and then they're the distributing arm. I wish that we were. But our people love doing it. They get behind it. They buy just, you know, they buy a backpack for their kid and for this other kid, you know, whoever, they don't know who it is, but they know they're helping out. And then in the winter, we do a coat and warm clothes drive because, again, there's a certain number of kids that they always say will come to school with inadequate warm clothing. And for us, that's about 3 months out of the year that you need that. Russ, for you, it's probably a longer time that kids would need.
Add another 2 months to that, man.
Yeah. So we're very blessed in that regard. But that's the thing that we do with partnering with that local school. And we just went in there and just made the connection. And they, you know, and they were like, yeah, sure, that's great. And then and now they call on us. Now they'll say, hey, we're doing this thing. Would you mind if, you know? And I don't know that we've told them no yet. They're not like, you know, they're not super ask all the time. We try to jump in and do whatever we can. A couple of community events that I wanted to hit, and I'm already stealing ideas from Russ and other people that were on that thread. But we partnered with a local hospital, especially in the last 2 years, and so we did a dinner for all of their hospital staff. And this is not one that very many, I know you can't do unless you have sort of a budget for it. We looked back and said, okay, how much did that one cost us? And it cost about $900, actually. But it was so impactful because we got to meet a lot of people. They said there's a lot of, you know, organizations that donate to our day shift, but could you do something for our night shift and overnight workers? And so we did. We brought them dinner from Olive Garden. But I was just at a taco truck in my neighborhood a couple of like a week ago, because I'm a sucker for those. And I walk up and there's this guy in front of me ordering. And I asked him, hey, what's good here? And he was telling me, I already knew because I go to that taco truck all the time. I just wanted to start a conversation with him. And he said, hey, I think that you're the guy who brought... Didn't you and your family and some people from your church bring us dinner? And he told us me where he worked. And I said, yeah. And it was 18 months ago that we did that. And he said, hey, I never got a chance to properly thank you, but thank you so much. It meant a lot to me. And I told my wife and all this other stuff. So I got to meet him, give him another gospel tract from our church and things like that. But it meant a lot to him. And I thought that was kind of cool. Another one that we did was we do around Easter time. We do Easter baskets for the community. And our church really gets behind this one in a big way. As you said, Russ, certain things work in certain areas. This one worked big for us. And so I deliver them the week coming into Easter. So like the Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, right before Easter Sunday. So we have all of these baskets that we actually just got from Walmart left over, ones they couldn't sell, they donated. So I had a surplus of like 800 just Easter baskets. But you could even just do like, you know, baggies, right, with some eggs and stuff in there. So we put the Easter, some Easter eggs in there filled with candy, and then just some random candy as well that our people have brought in. And we'll fill them up on a activity, take 2 or 3 hours to kind of stuff all these eggs, you know, like 1,200 eggs or whatever, put them in there. And then we'll put it on Facebook, and then people have responded. So last year, there was 110 people from the community that we were able to, so probably 60 or 70 houses. So 110 kids overall that we delivered to their door an Easter basket, and then with an invite from our church for Easter Sunday, said, hey, if you don't have a church to go to, we'd love to have you this Sunday. Try to give them a couple days ahead, that way they can make plans to come. And we did have some visitors come from that. But it's really cool because sometimes we take them to places, the parents, they'd meet us outside and they would get the basket and they'd say thanks, and then they would go, they'd put it in their car, they'd hide it or whatever. And I had a couple parents tell me this. They said, honestly, we didn't really have anything to give our kids for Easter. And so you doing this, you know, kind of helps us out, makes us look like, you know, we're really sad that we can't do anything, but you provided a way for us to be good to our own kids. And, you know, if you help someone's kid out, they'll remember that, right? They remember you for a long time.
Amen. It's very true.
They give a good reputation to the community. So that was a good one that we like to do. We've done oil changes for single moms. We did 60 vehicles. That we bought all the oil, did a contract with the local O'Reilly's to be able to do that. We've done community cleanup, back to school backpack drive. We already talked about that one. We've done a lunch for a coworker. We put it on there on Facebook and just said, you know, nominate a coworker that you think deserves a good lunch and tell us what you like about them. And that one was a huge win because, you know, we could only, we, I think we did like two a week for a month or 2 months or something like that. But just people watching other people say good things about them was really huge for people. And once again, they're associating saying, man, wow, Christians, you know, they really take the lead in this being good to people, showing the love of Christ, like what you were saying, Russ. And so I think that's really big. So the point is that like what you were saying to lead this off, I really want churches just to take this and to say, this is something we can do and get behind it and get excited about it. And maybe if you've only been doing outreach and door knocking, soul winning in a traditional way, this can be something that you can add in or start doing that really sees some results. Because people maybe can deny and say, well, that's just your opinion or that's not my religion or whatever else. But people can't deny when a church just loves on them and is good to them and tries to really sincerely like meet a need without asking for something right away, you know, and invite them to church. And obviously that's what we're here for. That's the business is eternal souls. But this is, there's a lot of ways, right, to be creatively loving on your community. And I think that that's like hugely important for everyone. So Russ, do you have anything just in closing or anything that you want to say or add that you've learned or things you've watched happen in your church?
So with the Easter thing, I just want to point out this, there are other ways. And I love that basket idea. That's similar to what we do with the roses and stuff. But last year, we're changing up this year just because of the amount of people we want to reach. We're probably talking 600 plus this year. But last year, we said 120 homes, we will go and hide eggs in your yard for you. When your kids wake up on Easter morning, they can find the eggs. So our staff, cool. Our members were out there Saturday night, and the parents knew, and we're keeping the kids inside. And so when the kids woke up, eggs were already hidden. And we just put candy in a bag and left that at the front door so that candy wasn't in the eggs and, you know, left and kids eating old candy or wet candy or whatever. So that's what we did, and the community loved that. In fact, so much so I saw other nonprofits doing it this year for the first time, because we did it last year. They're doing it as a fundraiser, and they said, pay us and we'll come drop eggs off at your house. The second thing, you know, you've talked a lot about money, and I know that for a lot of pastors, we are businessmen. If we are not, we probably are not pastors for very long. You have to have some kind of business sense, or you will walk away from a ministry that you bankrupt and start somewhere else and bankrupt that ministry too. So I get the need to watch the budget. And that looks different for every church. I tell you what we did. We started, first of all, by instilling in the hearts of our people the desire to reach the community through love. Then we, and by the way, the church paid for the events that we did. We just budgeted that amount. There was no vote necessary. We just kind of said, we're gonna budget this amount, we're gonna do this. But eventually, after a couple of years, I said, all right, guys, we're now gonna budget a percent. So 10% of everything that comes in outside of missions giving goes towards community outreach. And so essentially, the more that comes in, the more that more we will do. And the people at this point are excited to get involved, and they want to do more. They're not asking for less, they're asking for more. And so the answer is, the more we have financially, the more we can do. And since I started doing that, since we started doing these outreach programs, the giving in our church has easily tripled, if not more. To a point, Jeremy, we don't even take offerings anymore. There's a box in the back of the church, and I don't even announce that it's there. People, if they want to give, they know where it's at. And if they don't know where it's at, they ask, and I say it's just in the back, but you know, no obligation. I've got people we don't even know. I don't know who gives. I'm the pastor, that's my bookkeeper, but he tells me, hey, someone gave $7,000. I said, really, are they a member? He said, no, they're not a member. We don't know who they are, random people. And I really believe that as we are doing for the community, all I can assume is there are people in the community who are donating. We accept credit card tithes. We have a, you know, set up on our website, as most churches today do. And there's just random people who one-time gifts, or even sometimes multiple times a year, that are not associated with our church, giving thousands of dollars, and we'll never know who they are. So yeah. God, essentially, I put the funding in God's lap. And I didn't hinder him by saying, God, we're only going to spend $2,000. Nor did I say, God, I'm going to spend $20,000 and trust you to give it to me. I basically said, God, the more you bring in, the more we'll give. Put it in his hands. And boy, he has overflowed our cup.
Yeah. And when you work with that scarcity mindset always tells you, well, there's not going to be enough there. But when you work with a mindset of plentiful, you're right. It's amazing how much we've seen in the last 2 or 3 years, exactly the same thing. Once we started being good to people and going out there, the offerings have increased so much in the last 2 or 3 years. And I don't talk to our financial guy as much as you do because I'm not the lead pastor. But I know from the reports that the giving is up a lot. And people want to get behind it. when they see that you're putting it towards a good cause, right?
Exactly.
Towards good causes. And that momentum, you're right. And we same similar story. There's a gentleman that gave our church a several $1,000 check and just said, I know you're active in the community. I know the good stuff you're doing. I don't go to your church, but I want you guys to have this.
Exactly.
And so, you know, thank you very much, right? And that's all God. So it's amazing the funding that comes when you step out by faith. And of course we know that, but you know, sometimes we need to push. So Caleb, you had anything in closing out, man?
Yeah, if I could just echo what you guys just said, it's funny how people see what you're trying to do a good thing. And even if it's, you know, even if you're just still trying to figure it out, they get behind it and invest in it. And we've had people just give, you know, several $1,000s. And especially when we were 4 or 5 months old, it was like, what in the world? That's a huge deal. You know, when you're just a few months into it, that somebody's investing in you in that way. So it's just it's a huge thing. And I think in the end, I think just the overwhelming message has been, you know, regardless of what your context looks like, or regardless of kind of what your budget is, when you're on purpose loving people, not necessarily for your sake, but for their sake, there's always a blessing response that kind of flows from that. And so regardless of the budget or the situation, I think it's powerful. I do have a question for you guys though, if you don't mind. So you may have done more community events than I have up to this point. So some of the folks that you're connecting with, do you keep those, not to be greedy with it, but do you keep those contacts? Do you file them away for mailings or anything like that? Or is it just one and done kind of a thing?
So I'll go on this one first. On a couple of them, like there's some of them lunch to a coworker and stuff, you know, we'll take it to their office. That's where we're at. So I know that person's name. I don't know where they live. I don't know any other information on them, right? But like the Easter baskets, for example, those were all people within driving distance. So I limited and said, you need to live within our city limits. And so I do have a full list of where all those people are. And because they all have kids and things like that, I do go back and invite them, let's say for our vacation Bible school for kids, right? Or other kids events that we have or things like that. And not in a pushy way, not even in like a, hey, you remember that this happened or whatever else. I just go and say, hey, you know, I know that we kind of met you before or whatever else. And a lot of people know it. Oh yeah. Okay. This sort of thing. So I never try to make it weird or pushy that way or whatever. But I do know that they were receptive before, especially for, you know, a kids event type of thing. And so there are a couple of events that I do have information on that I will go back to if I feel like it's a really good fit for their family. Or if maybe someone came back and they said, hey, I made this visit or whatever, it went really, really well, dropped off the basket. I really, really think this person's looking for a church. I do kind of make a note of that to say, okay, hey, that's probably a good place that God's leading us in the future.
I've considered that. I've chosen not to, and I get where you're coming from, and I think that's very valuable. My reason, and it's not that it's better than your reasoning for doing it, is I don't want people to think in any way there's a motivation attached to the giving where I want something back. I talked about those partnerships before, and for us in the community, the partnership for me is purely one way. I just want to love you. Our church just wants to love you, and I don't want Satan or their skepticism or their pragmaticism to ever put a roadblock between that act of love and Christ. And I know the human condition well enough to know that that is a possibility, not saying it would happen, not saying it can't be useful. But for us, we do so much in the community now, and it's been years in the process. It's not overnight, but we don't necessarily need to contact them. When I announce something, pretty much everyone's looking. And so the announcement is enough to get our information out for the events that we want to invite them to.
Yeah. And I think that's big. Whenever I start to talk to church about this, they always will tell me like, well, then how do you, how do you get people to come to your church? And I tell them, look, just get going with this and you'll see right away. That's quickly, it doesn't become about, we talked to 80 people, but did 20 of them come to church? It becomes about loving on the community and you're building up that reputation. I always ask pastors, look, how long do you want to be in a community? Okay. Oh, for years and years. Okay. Then you need a good name and a good testimony, a good reputation in that community. Right. And so
right.
this is playing the long game as it, you know, to say, that's what Christ would do. He went about doing good. Right. And so do good. So that's what I want to impress on people as you're listening today is start from somewhere, right? But reach into your community, do it creatively, do it caringly, do it sincerely. And as Russ said, God will take care of those results. God knows where your address is and he knows that you need people. And so I think it's really important to just be doing something, right? That just shows that you have a kind heart for the community and do what Christ would do by doing good. So Guys, I thank you so much for your time. I know that you're busy people, but I knew this would be a good conversation. Different parts of the country here, different size churches, different size budgets, but all with the same goal and intent. So no matter where you're at, hopefully it gives you a good spot to launch off from. Guys, thanks for your time so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Jeremy. Cale, good to meet you, bud.
Nice to meet you too, man. Thanks, Jeremy.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this episode. And before I sign off, I do want to remind you, if you haven't yet, make sure that you're subscribed wherever you're listening to podcasts. We're available on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, and again, just about anywhere where you can find podcasts. And I do want to remind you one more time, make sure you sign up to get that free graphic of the week at churchmediahq.com. That's churchmediahq.com. And until next time, I do want to encourage you, it's time for your church to try something new, because it's so much better to fail at trying something incredible than it is to succeed at doing just the average. I'll see you next time right here on Church Media HQ.